behind him. Then the television cut to commercial. If Buckley wanted to see it again, he only had to wait an hour, because this was all that had been playing since yesterday, over and over and over. Chapter 2. That had been 2 days ago. 2 days of an uber-Dantean hell where everyone was a demon and everyone was damned. Buckley had run and killed, his flight-or-fight instinct working simultaneously within his spinning mind. Everyone he'd known, everyone he'd yet to meet, was a threat. He tried not to kill. He really tried. Deep down, smothered in swathes of terror, Buckley's humanity struggled with the necessity of his murders. Like the 23-year-old private he'd once been in Lebanon, however, he understood, as no suburban protester ever could, that absolutely, positively, without a fucking doubt, everyone was a threat. Everyone. Like the shopkeeper who sold him his daily pack of menthols, he'd found price-tagging the bodies of dead customers and placing them beside warm beer and hot dog relish. Or the cat lady who lived next door, who he'd found feeding on a particularly large calico from her once prodigious collection of 57 felines. Or the crossing guard who was embattled with a herd of schoolchildren in an abattoir of pigtails, gnashing teeth, and freckled screams between two thin yellow lines that had once meant safety. Buckley had known and loved them all. He was a Christian, and he tried to live his life by the complicated precepts of a sometimes confused God. He did not covet his neighbor's wife. He did not lie, neither did he cheat or steal. Even when it hurt, Buckley had been known to turn the other cheek. Now, however, as when he'd been in Lebanon just before the barracks bombing that killed 299 Marines, Buckley understood that turning the other cheek was akin to allowing a bright-eyed young Arab boy with an AK and no sense in the world to take potshots at his convoy when they went out on their thrice-weekly trip to the coast. And like the neighborhood paperboy who chased him for 6 blocks on a bicycle, the cards and the spokes a continuous clackety-clack warning of what could be, Buckley had tried to avoid the killing. But just like in Lebanon, the killing became necessary, and Buckley had tired before the child. With resignation, he'd spun, aimed, and fired. When the empty bike tumbled past, he felt defeat in his victory. Buckley would have cried if he could, but he was too dried up inside. The religious called it the Day of Doom. The environmentalist called it the inevitable effect of sunspots on the hole in the ozone layer created by greedy industrialists who'd never listened to their warnings. The conspiracy theorists called it a military experiment gone awry. The liberals called it a purposeful assault on humanity by the conservatives, as if a roomful of right-wing extremists had cooked up the entire event after a round of 18 holes at a whites-only golf club, followed by drive-by lynchings of the losing players' caddies. The conservatives called it an attempt by California tree-huggers to hijack the news with tales to scare children at bedtime. Even the Trekkies were spouting I come in peace crap about terraforming or terracotta or whatever. When the governor of North Carolina, presidential hopeful and the anointed savior of the Democratic Party, was eaten alive on national TV, people stopped caring who was responsible. It was a fucking disaster, pure and simple. And in the top floor of the Franklin Hotel, where Buckley had managed to find brick-and-mortar safe harbor, he wallowed in the dregs of charcoal-filtered salvation, watching it all. As a citizen of Wilmington, he was a veteran of 7 hurricanes, an earthquake, and 2 tornadoes. He couldn't help but wonder how FEMA would classify this. It wasn't as if no one believed, just that the event was too much. Maggies were one thing, but a sentient herd was another. Chapter 3. "Close the fucking door!" Buckley shouted, rushing across the room. Lashana ignored him, and pulled the door wide enough so that everyone got a view of Sally Struthers, her hair matted with blood, her face pockmarked by maggot holes, and her skin undulating as the tiny beast tasted the air.
"Open up and let me in, or I'll huff and I'll puff and I'll blow the house in," Sally coughed, then gagged as 100 maggies erupted from her throat and showered Lashana in the face. Both women screamed. Buckley hit the door with his shoulder, slamming it shut. Lashana screamed again as she raised her hands to bat the maggies from her face. But she hadn't the time. Buckley shoved the barrel of the shotgun into the girl's chest and pulled the trigger. Her eyes flew wide as her chest plastered the door behind her. She fell to the floor, a look of surprise still on her face. Buckley began to stomp on the maggies that had fallen to the ground. He had to get every one of them. To miss even one meant their deaths.
"What the fuck? The fuck did you kill her for?" Samuel screamed. "She was my girl, you son of a bitch! I'm gonna do nothing!"